One thing I wanted to ask you first of all was, Esther was your father's sister.
No, my mother's sister.
Oh, your mother's
sister.
Yes. I see. And they're all Knowleses then. So, do they start off in Manchester, the whole family? I mean, are they?
No, they were London family. The Knowles grandparents came. The Knowles her father's parents came from Birmingham.
I see. Yes.
But I don't know anything about them.
Yes. And your father's mother was.
This is my mother's.
Your mother's father, I see, yes. Your mother's mother, then.
Was London.
Yes, I see. So how does the family get up to Manchester, then?
It isn't family in Manchester. I've always called her Auntie. You know how. Yes. When I was a child, you didn't call people by their Christian names.
I understand.
You were always tagged on to Auntie this. The same as I call Mrs. Groom-Smith Auntie Gladys.
Yes.
She isn't really all that much older than I am. Mm. And it's quite ridiculous to call her Auntie now, but since the age of 2½, I always have called her Auntie.
Shall I take one? I thought you might like one. Mm. I see. So there's no relationship.
No, Edith Pepper. That's what you mean about the Manchester.
Mm.
Well, she was one of my father's dancers in the folk revival movement.
See. So that's how you came to. And
always was a great friend of the family's, and so I always called her Auntie.
I see. So, where does you see the thing in that memoir in there is that she doesn't really say anything about herself.
No, that's what I said to you. You'll find that her profile is really a profile of Pethick Lawrence's.
Is that typical?
That's absolutely typical, yes. Mm. Her whole life was there, mixed up with them, and she didn't have any other life.
Mm. Mm.
And even after they died, she couldn't let them rest. She was always doing things to keep them in the limelight.
So she really dedicated her life.
Dedicated her whole life to them, yes.
Mm. But she, as a child then, she's in London, isn't she?
Yes.
She goes to a board school, presumably.
Yes.
That's where she makes contact.
Yes.
Can you tell me anything about her father and about her family situation? Well, she doesn't say anything about that at all.
Her father was a printer. That's all I really knew.
Hmm. And
was in fact in one of the very early trade unions. I think the printers' union was one of the very early trade unions,
it? Yes. He was a compositor, was he?
Yes.
And her mother, was she involved in the labour movement at all, or
no?
In the trade
union? No.
Hmm.
Not at
anyway,
all.
Anyway, she gets herself, in a sense, introduced to the Pethick Lawrence's via the school board business. Then she gets involved in the Esperance Club, doesn't she? And that obviously strengthens the connection. How did your father get involved with the Esperance movement, and how does it fit with...
Well, the Esperance Club, through Mary Neal being involved in the revival of the folk dance, used to teach their girls the folk dances and teach the children the folk games.
Mm.
And then when they wanted to do shows and demonstrations, they needed men.
Yes.
And so the girls were asked to bring their boyfriends along.
Mm.
And Esther's and my mother's cousin, of course, Ted Conniff, was one, and several of his boyfriends, of which my father was one, went along to the Esperance Club to help with the dancing.
So that's where your father met your mother?
That's where my father met my mother,
So you're an
Esperance. Where my father met Mary Neal, originally.
So did the folk dance movement actually affect your father's ideas more generally? I mean, was it more than just a folk dancing movement, really? Did it actually tempt your father into being interested in the labour movement or, working class movements at all?
No more than being involved with the suffragette movement.
Mm. Mm. Because I suppose he would have then met the Pethick Lawrences and moved in all the circles that...
Yes, and even went to Nebworth House with the Lyttons and demonstrated the folk dancing there, yes.
Yes, I see, yes. So, anyway, your father and Esther, presumably, were quite close because they'd moved in the same sort of circles, really.
Yes.
So you must have seen a lot of Esther yourself.
In fact, oh, well, no, I won't say that.
Shall I switch off?
Yes.
So she would sort of enjoy family occasions and sort of be involved?
Oh, yes.
When you say she didn't like moving out of her social sphere, what was her social sphere exactly? I mean, you're not talking...
Well, they were working class people who lived in the back streets of Tottenham Court Road in London, you know.
I see.
She moved up very much through the social spheres, and after a few years she moved entirely in the sphere of the suffragettes and the Pethick Lawrences and... Lady Constance Lytton and all those, you know, and...
So it really does move, is the occasion for moving her right out.
Right out, yes.
Yes, I see, I hadn't realised that. So she's in a way a sort of another Annie Kenny.
Yes, that's right. She had a better brain than the others, and she won a scholarship to a, what would now be called a grammar school, and she got a junior Oxford.
Did she really? Which was the grammar school lecture, Mrs. Neal?
Well, I cannot tell you. I
not
just,
to worry, I, just I
can't remember. And they wanted her to stay on.
At school.
At school, and her father said, no, you know, she must go out to work and help bring in the money. And the Pethick Lawrences actually went to her father and pleaded that she should stay on at school. She was so clever. And... he was adamant, and then they said, well, we will take her into the WSPU office as an office girl. So that's how she started.
I see, so it really was a sort of good works in a way.
Yes, it was good works, yes, that's right.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that. And that really, from then onwards, she's got no career except the Pethick Lawrences.
That's it,
really.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, I see. Did she, would she have struck me, for instance, if I'd met her as a working class woman?
No,
or would she
not at all.
Assume
no.
The
No, she'd assumed their the etiquette and the courtesies and the manners of people like Grace Rowe and Emmeline Pethick Lawrence.
What about her mother, Mrs. Needham? She was just a housewife, was she?
She was a housewife, yes.
Yes, I see. Did she have any brothers or sisters? I mean, was she...
Many, I think. I only ever met two of them. And they were... the mother of, I said, Ted Conniff, who was in the dancing, and an unmarried sister.
So she wasn't the only one.
She wasn't an only one, no.
Did the sort of going up in the socially as a result of the subject, did that distance her from her parents at all, or did
no,
she stay?
That's what I say. Mm. She was so firmly established in the family that she wouldn't entertain anything that would have cut her off from the family. Although she was so very clever at keeping the two halves of her life in watertight compartments.
Was she really? How do you mean? About
well, they never mixed. If you can switch it off a minute.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
What was her life like? I mean, after she got attached to the Pethick Lawrences, did she actually live with the Pethick Lawrences in their house all the time, or what?
No, she always had her own establishment, but spent many times down at Four Ways. Well, at the Mascot originally, and then at Four Ways, weekends, weeks. But she always maintained her own house to go back to when she wanted to.
So she really was a sort of professional secretary, but rather more than that, was she?
Oh, very much more, yes.
Sort of companion, was she, would you say?
No, never a companion. Not in the sense that you mean a companion, where she wasn't in the least domesticated. She wouldn't have ever have gone in the kitchen and cooked or anything like that. And they always had housekeepers anyway.
did they?
Yes.
Yes, I see. So really, in a sense, you perhaps see her as a colleague, would you? I mean, and at that sort of level...
I don't think she ever felt that she was... she was always their very dear secretary.
And that was a secretary to both of them, was it?
Well, Emmeline originally, and then P.L. later.
You mean when she died, or...
In fact, I think she trained Gladys in the ways of the office. Mm. Gladys became personally Emmeline's secretary, and Esther was P.L.'s.
Yes. Where did she learn to actually be a secretary? Was it in the suffragette movement, really, do you think?
I think I'm right in saying this, that the Emmeline, in fact, sent her to one of these secretarial schools while she was office girl in the WSPU, where she learned her typing and her shorthand and
so she really was a professional secretary in the sense she could do everything.
Oh, she did everything. She handled all the money, she paid out all the wages for the London staff and the Four-Way staff, and she did all the income tax forms from the sticking of the stamps on their employment cards and everything. Yes,
she was actually a very good organizer, was she?
Extremely, yes.
Yes, sort of really very good with paperwork.
Most efficient.
Yes, I see. So she sounds really rather indispensable.
She was, yes.
What was the sort of relationship between the Bellick Lawrences and her? Was it? I mean, I'm simply really making shots in the dark. Did they, in any sense, patronise her?
No, never. No.
I mean, she really was treated as an old friend.
Yes,
sort of thing.
I think she. There are letters upstairs. My dear and my dear Esther, and I haven't read them all, but they are there to be read one of these days.
Mm. Yes, so really, it's a very intimate sort of
relationship. Very intimate, but she was the secretary.
Mm. And she made a point of always having a life of her own with her family.
Yes,
I see. Yes. What about politics? Did she shed her Labour, sort of?
Eventually, yes.
She
was
really?
Very Labour. That was one of the real rows, I think, she had. There were probably only two or three in their whole lives, but it was a real row with P.L. when she went into him and said, I'm going to tell you before I do it, but I am going over to the Liberal Party.
Oh, she told
yes.
him that, didn't
oh,
she?
Yes. It's only fair to tell you that I'm going to do it. And,
When was that, Mrs. Needham, then?
Very much later life, after he was Secretary of State for India.
I see. What sort of made her do that, do you think? And
I think she felt that the Labour Party had moved such a long way away from what they had meant the Labour Party to be when it was started.
I see, yes, because that quite often happens.
Yes.
But still, as you say, it must have been difficult, given... One
small incident, she always went to the conference with him. And
The
Labour Party conference. Mm. And eventually they were all, except Bevan, in evening dress, and they were getting very hoity-toity, and the cabinet ministers wouldn't dance with the rank-and-file wives, and this sort of thing. And she said that was no policy for a Labour Party. And that's just an incident. This was one thing which was putting her off,
What about religion? Is she one of these theosophist suffragettes?
No. She has... been interested in every religion possible, I think. You'll find a whole lot of books on Buddha and everything. She was a Methodist at one time. She was she was baptized in a Baptist church. she probably dabbled with Catholicism.
She's educating herself really about religion.
Yes. She was a Rudolf Steinerite at one stage, because Dorothy Pethick was that's Emmeline's sister.
Yes.
She was a Rudolf Steinerite. Mm. And Esther was always, for many years, went on holiday with Dorothy Pethick.
Did she really?
Yes. And toured all over the continent, you know.
Yes.
And she became interested in that, so she studied that and then rejected that. She was interested in theosophy after she met Grace Rowe, and she rejected that. She always believed in reincarnation anyway. She's all religions. She isn't any one.
It's interesting. I mean, presumably nowadays she would have definitely gone to university, wouldn't she?
Very, yes.
I mean, she was an intelligent woman.
Very intelligent, yes. A most open mind, and until she died. Oh, yes, she had all her faculties and a mental agility which put me to shame.
Did she really? Mm. So she liked talking about politics and affairs, did she?
Yes. You couldn't stop her.
A lot of them are like that. Was she fun to be with, in a sense? I mean, was there a lot of joie de vivre about her, do you think, or not?
I wouldn't say joie de vivre, no, but she was, everyone liked going to see her. She didn't recognise a generation gap. She was on equal footing either way with the older generations or the younger generations.
So as a child, you would find her rather congenial?
She was my companion more than my aunt. Everything I've done through life, I've done with her. She took me to my first holiday, she took me to my first pantomime, my first foreign holiday, my first ballet.
So she really did treat you as an adult, really, as
an
equal.
Yes, that's right. Own sons would ring up and say, "May we come and see you?" They liked going to see her. And she always used to say, "Oh, I'm so thrilled they want to come and see me, you know." And they'd both been to see her within 10 days of her dying, so you can tell they went very regularly.
Did they really? That really is a compliment, isn't it? Did she read a lot?
Yes. Apart from that lot, which are scientific books and are there for my husband, I should say 75% of these books are hers.
Are they really?
And I have two more bookshelves in the other room, which were all hers, yes.
So she did, that was one of her hobbies.
One of her hobbies, yes.
What about other causes? I mean, she's interested in religion, and she's obviously a feminist.
Yes.
Does she go in for any other causes at all?
No.
I mean, is she, for instance, keen on animals?
No.
Kindness to animals,
or a vegetarian, or anything like that? No.
Yes. Because quite often people go in for one cause, go in for a number of other progressive causes as well, but obviously she doesn't do that. What about her house? I mean, she lived in London, did she? That was her base, was it?
She lived in a bed sitting room in my parents' house in North London when she first left home. Then she had more than a bed-sitting room. She had a little flat in my father's house. And then she piled up with a friend, a civil servant called Olive Gosling, and they moved to West Ealing. They had a very big, much bigger flat in the house in West Ealing. Then after we moved to Harrow, that's my mother and father and myself, they decided to buy a house out at Harrow, and that was in 1926. So she had a little house, a little suburban.
Whereabouts in Harrow? Because I know it quite well, actually.
My aunt's house was, it's called Harrow, but it's much nearer to Kenton than.
I see. Yes.
It's just on the edge of Kenton Recreation Ground.
Yes, I see. So she was really there until she died.
She died there. She lived there 46 years. Yes.
I see. So then did she sort of commute then into London, to the centre of London, to see the
Penny Lights? Yes, every day.
Did she really?
Yes.
I see.
Unless she was away staying with them.
I see.
And I don't think she ever once stayed in the Lincoln's Inn flat. She liked to go home.
Very sensible, actually,
yes,
I think, didn't
yes.
you? Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that gives a very good picture of her her life. What about her leisure interests? I mean, did she had a lot of cultural interests, presumably, did she?
Leisure interests. Well, she loathed domesticity, but she loved her garden. She loved her foreign holidays. She went every year somewhere. And as she got older, every year was going to be her swan song. And by January, she was saying, "Where shall we go this year, Nita dear?"
And she'd take you with her?
We went together, yes.
Did she really?
She went 3 times with Gladys, once on the Obramigau trip, and once to Mallorca, and once to Italy somewhere. Riccione, I think. But normally the Pethick Lawrences wouldn't let them both go off together. These were exceptional times, you know. They pleaded, "May we both be off together?"
Yes. She got on well with Mrs. Groomsmith.
Oh,
she?
Yes, they were bosom pals.
Were they really?
Yes. And there again, you've got a decade gap. It's not a generation there, but there's a decade gap. Gladys comes almost exactly between Esther and myself in age, you know.
Yes, yes. What was she like on holiday? Did she sort of approach the holiday with sort of great zest?
Oh, yes, yes. And no package tours, you know. You had to do it the hard way.
I see.
And meet the people and get on local buses and...
She had good health, did she?
No. You knew she was deaf from a very early age.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
This was a great achievement. Overcoming deafness through the type of life she had to live. A very early age, she wore an instrument. And for Pethick, she had to interview a lot of people through his social work and through his parliamentary work. And she overcame her deafness.
So she lip-read, did she?
She had an instrument and... yes, I think she was a very good lip reader, yes. Because she always wanted... if you were washing up at the sink and she was behind you, she couldn't, didn't always get what you were saying. She really needed to talk man-to-man with you.
I see, and watch you.
Yes, yes.
That's interesting. Because that's, in a sense, a common ground with Emmeline, isn't it? Cause
yes.
Emmeline was very deaf
and had one of those huge instruments that you sort of took 2 people to walk beside her to carry, you know.
I've heard about that.
Have you?
Yes,
I have. At one stage she had a huge ear trumpet, you know. But aunties were always very... obscure, small things. She spent a vast amount of money on buying them so that she always had the best she needed. She always had at least 3 instruments because she was terrified of one going wrong and letting her down, you know.
And yet she's prepared to go off on these adventures abroad
without.
But otherwise she had quite good health.
She suffered always from very bad migraine, but there again, always overcame it to finish a thing that Pethick had to have tonight because he was going to speak in the House tomorrow, you know. Gladys will tell you that very often she used to go to the chemist in Chancery Lane and get this special draught for Miss Knowles at lunchtime that would simply enable her to get through the rest of the day, you know.
And she was so determined
to get everything done that he wanted.
They're very lucky to be able to surround themselves by people like this, the Pethick
Lawrences. Oh, yes.
How did they do it, do you think? I mean, were they just...
Personal magnetism. Mm. Yes, yes.
Mm. I mean, obviously... In your aunt's case, they did a great deal for
her. They did,
her.
Yes.
So that, in a sense, I suppose, is enough,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
But how were they also actually very nice to her all the time as well? And
you
saw them with her?
Yes.
Because that's really quite an achievement, getting people that dedicated to you, isn't it?
Yes.
What?
And they were dedicated servants. I mean, she would be in that office, having gone up from Harrow. She'd be in working at 8:30, and I've known her get home at 10 o'clock at night if he wanted something specially done.
So there's no sort of trade union
mindedness? No trade union mindedness there, no set rules. You've heard the story about when she started in the WSPU,
yeah.
And she discovered that the office boy, who only did exactly the same as
yes.
she did, was getting more money. Yes, that's
I've
right.
I've
yeah.
heard that.
Yes, that's
she,
right.
When you say she was impatient with housework, why do you think she was? What made her like that? Was it a principle or just taste? I mean,
no, just taste, I think. Mm. It was always the same at home. Esther got out of everything.
Mm.
Mother used to talk about she and her sister having to take it in turns to clean all the shoes on a Sunday morning, but Esther never did. It was just something that they grew up with, you know.
Yes, I see. So I really wondered, you see, whether she was impatient with housework, partly because she didn't think women should be landed with this.
Not
you know?
At all, no.
It was just a personal thing.
Yeah.
Yes, that's interesting. How did she look after herself then? I mean, if she was...
Well, when she lived with Olive Gosling, Olive Gosling was the domestic half of the partnership.
Yes, I see.
Esther did all the letter writing, she did all the gardening, she did all the sewing. That was her half of the partnership. But the household was run by Auntie Olive.
Mm.
All the housework, all the catering, all the cooking was all done.
What about dress?
What about dress? What do you mean,
I mean
exactly?
Is she interested in clothes at all or not?
Not really, only so far as she was comfortable.
Practical, really?
Yes, yes.
Mm. Sort of sensible shoes and
very
and
sensible shoes, mm. miles too big usually, flopping around at the heels, yes.
But if she bothered, could she have looked nice? I mean, was she a nice looking woman?
She wasn't very, and she was most unphotogenic. They didn't, and in fact, there are practically no photographs of her after her 20s or so. She just, except for passport photographs, she just wouldn't have her photograph taken.
Mm.
And if you insisted upon taking it, she would have dark glasses on, an eye shade, and probably a berry on top of that. And
she really does sound rather a character. What about makeup? Presumably no makeup.
Never used makeup.
No. On principle, really? Or?
No, just couldn't be bothered. Mm. Hadn't got time.
More important things in
yes,
life.
Yes, yes.
Now that's you're building up a rather good picture. What do you think we ought to be getting on to? I mean, are we really only just talking about superficial things with her, or is there something central about her that you think one ought to emphasise to bring out her personality?
Well, if you're meaning the central thing of her life, it was Perfect Lawrence.
Mm. Mm. And really her service to them.
Service to them, yes.
Yes. Did she talk a lot about her suffragette days at all? I mean, was it a sort of a theme with her a lot?
She talked a lot about the Perfect Lawrences.
Mm. Did she?
And in later years, as with old people generally, it could become tedious.
Mm.
I understood her. I didn't mind. I heard the stories over and over again. In later years, my sons understood more too, but there was a period where they got very, they used to say, oh, not Perfect Lawrences again, you know, sort of thing.
It was obviously the centre of her life.
Most conversations you started, it didn't matter what it was about or it came round eventually to she would bring in my dear Freddie would say this or dear Emmeline would have said that or did so and so, you know, and back you came to.
That's very interesting. Yes. Did she, I mean, she got on equally well with both of them, did she? I mean,
yes.
In a sense, I suppose you had to because they were such a team,
yes.
Weren't they? You couldn't
yes.
really get on better,
no,
better
no.
with one
no.
than with the other. But one thing that does interest me is how she became, so to speak, at the centre of the whole Suffragette Fellowship business. I mean, I presume it's because she's Perfect Lawrence's secretary, really, is it?
This is very interesting, really, because she all through, she refused to join the Suffragette Fellowship.
Did she?
She was never a member until Grace Rowe came back from America. Permanently. She came back for a while when she lived in Elgwyn House.
Mm.
Then she had a house at Letchworth. No, Hemel Hempstead.
Mm-hmm.
Then went back to America for a while, and then she came back permanently. And Auntie was always very friendly with Miss Rowe. And Miss Rowe's getting older. You won't ever let Miss Rowe hear this,
no,
would you?
No, no, no. Anyway.
Miss Rowe was getting older and needed support in the suffragette fellowship against the Golden Barks. You've met?
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
Yes, I have.
Yes.
At least I haven't met them. I know of them. I know
yes.
who they are.
There are two sisters. They are
That's
nieces
right.
of the Pankhurst, Emmeline
yes.
Pankhurst.
That's right.
And Grace was needing support, and she used to say to Esther, oh, if only, you know, you could get onto the committee, if you joined the fellowship. And Auntie approved of what Miss Rowe was trying to do, and so she actually joined the fellowship to support her.
I see, yeah.
And then Teresa Billington, I think, was the secretary.
Yes.
Wasn't she? Yes.
Could
Teresa
be, yeah.
Billington was the secretary, and she was killed in a road accident, wasn't she?
No,
no,
she died, I think, of cancer or something like that, actually. I've talked to her daughter.
Well, oh, I see. Well, she died and the...
She died about 64 or so.
That would be about right, yes. And the secretaryship was vacant.
Mm-hmm.
And...
I see. So that's how it
that's
all happened.
How
what was actually the dispute with the Golden Bars? I mean, what was the issue, really? Why did Grace Rowe need to sort of have Esther's help?
I think for... very many years they've been trying to round it up and finish it. They were all getting so much older, there didn't seem to be a need for the suffragette fellowship. They didn't do anything except spend a lot of money on having a Mrs. Pankhurst's birthday celebration
yes.
in St. Ermin's Hotel,
yes,
you know,
every year,
and
yes.
every year and this sort of thing.
Yes.
And of course they have a vast amount of money.
Have they really?
Oh yes.
Mm.
And some of them wanted to put the money to some purpose, donate it all to, say, a scholarship for a PPE person,
yes.
you know,
yes.
this sort of thing,
yes.
and finish
yeah.
with the fellowship.
Mm.
And, of course, the Golden Barks are so much younger,
mm.
that, and there's all that money there, and they didn't ever want to round up. Finish it off. They want it to carry on.
I see. Yes. Yes,
I don't know what their purpose is. Mm.
Anyway, Grace was in favour of winding up then and really wanted Esther to help her.
They've had committee meeting after committee meeting, if you can see any of their minutes, to discuss what they will do with the money and finish. And their voting was never, you know, it was too...
It's interesting because Mary Lawson told me things like this,
yes,
you know,
yes.
because she clearly, as a businesswoman, thought they were
oh,
impractical.
Yes, oh yes, and they haven't done anything for years,
except
constructive,
have
except have spend money on the in entertaining themselves in various places.
Mm. Mind you, I suppose it does. I mean, if you're interested in old people, I'll switch off at any point. I mean, it's on again now.
Yeah.
Why did she? Why wouldn't she join the suffragette fellowship? Because she was a suffragette, wasn't she? I mean, you'd think she would have joined until Grace asked her to.
Well, she was always Pethick Lawrence, and the suffragette fellowship was mainly Pankhurst orientated.
Mm.
I think that was the basic reason.
I see. So did she in fact, so you remember there was a split, wasn't there,
yes,
1912?
Yes. Mm.
Did she go with the Pethick Lawrences then in that split, or did she stick with the Pankhursts?
No, always with the Pethick Lawrences.
I see,
yes.
So really she, in a sense, I suppose she's in a way out of sympathy then, is she, with the Pankhurst element?
I think
element.
She was out of sympathy with the Pankhurst element and with the Suffragette Fellowship generally, until... her very close relationship with Miss Rowe.
Mm, I understand now, yes, of course I hadn't thought of that. Yes. What about sort of foreign policy and international relations, all that? Because Emmeline Pethick Lawrence was very interested, as you know,
yes,
in that.
Yes.
Did your aunt really have an independent interest in that, or was she only interested because of Mrs. Pethick Lawrence?
I think interested in typing the encyclical letters that were sent back. And then, of course, very interested in India when he was Secretary of State for India. And again,
she's really interested only in what concerns them, and whatever concerns them concerns her.
Yes.
She sounds a totally dedicated person, rather dream of a person to have connected to one. Is there anything else about her that you really think one ought to bring out? I mean, apart from these things. I mean, you have really given a marvellous picture of what she was like, but you know, all the same, I don't know her and you did, and I wonder if there's anything else you think one ought to bring out. Did she like sort of comforts of life, like food and sort of warmth and poverty and things like that?
Warmth, yes, definitely. Food didn't really interest her very much, as long as she had enough to eat.
Mm.
And she didn't mind who cooked it. When Roland would ring up and say, may we come, and she'd say, you may come by all means, but I'm not feeding you.
What was her house like, actually, Mrs. Needham? Did she take trouble with her house? You know, I'm talking
she
about the
kept
Harrow
it
one.
Very clean and very tidy, but it was very full.
The garden was nice, wasn't it?
Garden she kept beautifully, yes. Mm. Very interested in roses and plants and spent a lot of money on it. Never spent a great deal on the house. She acquired furniture from all sorts of places after the house was bombed by a landmine in the war, and she had practically nothing left in the way of furniture. And the Pethick Lawrences gave her some, Mary Neal gave her some. May Pethick died, and she had some of hers. I don't think she ever bought anything. Her house was furnished with all these. That's one chair. Mm. That was one of her chairs.
So she didn't take an interest in the house in terms of sort of interior decoration and sort of make a fuss about the house.
Oh, no.
But it was comfortable for her.
It was beautifully comfortable in the way she had it exactly as she wanted it.
Mm. Mm. Was she a character locally in Harrow? I mean,
no,
was she
not at all. No,
was she really?
No,
she didn't join in that world.
Never had time until after the Pethick Lawrences were dead.
Mm.
Mm. Well, if you go out at 7 in the morning and you get home after dark, you have no local life.
Did she was she sort of very preoccupied with time, with saving time and sort of not wasting time? Was she in a hurry a lot and that sort of thing?
Until after she retired, yes.
Mm.
And then after she retired, even then she didn't do all the things she said she was going to do when she had retired, because she involved herself deliberately in doing so much more for the Pethick Lawrences.
Mm. Mm.
She organised the whole of the Pethick Lawrence Memorial Fund.
Did she really?
She organised the whole of the ceremonies down at Dorking and Pease Lake. She worked with Vera Brittain very closely over that biography.
Did she really? Yeah.
What else? Oh, she organised the whole of the scroll ceremony.
Mm.
After she died, I tore up files of letters and all the acceptances and all the refusals and all the agenda for it, you know, times of trains to be met and coaches for the old people to be taken. And
she was very systematic with
very
paper,
systematic.
Was she?
Oh, yes.
But when you say after she retired when Pethick Lawrence died, did she?
Well, quite soon afterwards, but there was a lot to be done. Lady Helen immediately had to move out of Lincoln's Inn, and they took a flat in Gloucester Road in Kensington, and Gladys and Esther worked sorting things out, and there was a lot of correspondence, and they were his literary executrix as well. Then Lady Helen became ill, and she couldn't cope, and decided to go to America to live with her son. And so all that had to be cleared up.
Mm.
And finally, when that was cleared, half of the stuff that was left in files and boxes and that went to Gladys and half went to Auntie Esther's at Kenton. Mm. And the flat was closed, and that was the end. Mm. She was retired then.
Mm. I see. So that really kept her busy until the last 10 years of
her
life.
Yes,
really.
Well, he died in 61. And I suppose it must have been probably late 62 or early 63 before Helen went to America.
Mm. So the last 10 years of her life were spent largely in sort of suffragette fellowship work.
Yes,
and looking after Pethick Lawrence's interests.
Interests, yes.
Yes.
I want to see them vindicated, she always used to say. They've never had their full due. They're marvellous people
What did she mean by that? Vindicated in their role in the women's movement?
Yes, that's right, yes.
I think she's right.
Yes.
I mean, again, switching off, did she mind getting old, your aunt?
She didn't mind getting old while she still had all her mental agility and her faculties, and she was mobile. She would have loathed to have been independent of anyone. And
being dependent on anyone.
Yes, being dependent on anyone.
Yes.
And so many times she said, well, when I need to go, I want to go quickly. Mm. I don't want to be a burden on you, dear. It wouldn't be fair, you know.
You would be the natural person she would have turned
to. She would have been my responsibility, yes. Oh, yes. Mm.
Did she take an interest in your own career, Mrs. Needham?
Oh, yes, yes.
And I really wondered whether her interest in women would mean that she'd take a practical interest in a particular woman who meant a lot to her,
yourself. Yes,
I mean, your career opportunities and what you did.
She used to walk me through Regent's Park when I was so high and say, that's where you'll go to college, dear, you know, sort of thing.
Bedford College
in Regent's Park.
And you did?
And I did, oh yes.
Well, that's rather splendid, isn't it?
And I think she was actually very upset when I got engaged. Mm. And I took my husband, my fiancé, up to Lincoln's Inn to meet her. And he's always been very amused. And she looked at me and she said, now, you are really sure, dear? Oh, well, of course, divorce is so easy these days.
Was she actually, I mean, that, in a sense, that's a very tactless thing to say. Was she actually tactless?
Very, yes. Yes, very tactless with she probably would not have been with certain people, but with her family and that, she was very tactless. You could always rely on Auntie to put her foot in it.
Is that partly, do you think, nervousness or shyness?
I think she never stopped to think. That's what she thought and that's what she said. Mm. There was no taking counting 20 or so before you spoke,
Of course, that fits in a sense with these constant anecdotes about the Lawrences, or talking about the Lawrences.
Yes. Mm.
She's not thinking about how other people are going to receive what she says.
No, that's right, yes.
Yeah. But nonetheless, that doesn't make her an unattractive personality to you, does it?
Oh, she's not.
And how do you reconcile that? I presume that's just one of... She's just human.
Oh, that was just E.K., yes.
Mm. Yes, you called her E.K.
Yes. Well, you see, somehow, you'll think that I lived in this atmosphere as well. It was P.L. and it was E.P.L. and it was G.G., which was originally Gladys Groom before she married, and E.K. And all the memos in the office were always just... signature, just those initials, and they always were G.G., E.K.
And she talked about them, like,
yes,
she would use those initials.
E.P.L. and P.L.
Yes. That's very interesting. Mm. Did she feel that the obituaries and so on of the Pellet Lawrences then, when they died, were satisfactory?
Oh, yes. You've got one of those little booklets, have you? Memories of Fred and Emily?
No, I don't think I have. No.
Tiny.
No. It'd be very interesting to see that, because I didn't know about it. If that's all right by
that's
you.
That's all right, yes.
Yes.
Immediately you want me to repeat that?
Yes,
the moment
he
died, they started a Pethick Lawrence Memorial Fund, and she was the prime organiser. And the money rolled in. He was a very, very well-known and very well-popular person,
you know.
And also, she, through the suffragette movement, money rolled in, and they had a lot of money. And the committee was formed, and if you'll find the address on the bottom of that published from, and that is my aunt's house, my aunt's address, 3 Francis Road, Kenton Harrow, you see.
Yes, yes, I see. Yeah.
And then they decided what to do with the money. One was the Vera Brittain biography, and then they had a memorial portrait painted, which I think the picture is in the front there.
Yes.
They had a seat at Dorking and a seat at Holmwood. Various things. I can't remember other things, but that's how all this money was spent, and my aunt really organised it. And she really organised the whole day when the ceremony of placing the seats and the party in the evening.
I'm presuming she'd devote a lot of affection to that.
Yes, and it was beautifully organised. There were coaches from London to take the old suffragettes down to Peaslake and Dorking, and they were all taken home again at night, even taxis to the doorstep from the coach station, you know, and this sort of thing.
Did you, since you mentioned Teresa Billington, did you ever meet her?
No, I didn't know her, no.
Because she's a very interesting woman, I think. I mean, a controversial person, but very interesting
No,
person.
I didn't know her.
I just wondered if you had.
But
of course, in a sense, your aunt is at the centre of the whole thing then, for the last 10 years of her
yes,
life.
Yes, yes.
Pity I never met her. Did you, you yourself saw a lot of the Perlick Lawrences, presumably as a younger person?
As a younger person, yes, but of course I moved out of London in permanently in 1941.
Are there any sort of things about them that stuck in your memory? I mean, things that you think ought to be remembered, because you know, obviously they're such important people. If you've got any memories of them, I'd be awfully interested to know.
One of my most vivid memories of him was the time he had given me tickets to go to the Houses of Parliament. I was still at school, and I had a friend of mine, we went together, and we were in our school uniform, and we were queued up to get into the gallery, you know. And he came, he was a very small man,
I didn't know that.
He was very small, and he moved like a young sort of robin, and he came briskly across the big waiting room there and up to us in the queue and had a word with us, you know, and before he went off into the house, which I thought was very kind when he was so occupied with all his
very
own.
Nice,
but he knew we were going on that day, and so he came to greet us. You know.
Very nice. I mean, they were, and there's no doubt about it, they were a rather remarkable partnership, weren't they? I mean, it was a work of art, their marriage.
Oh, yes.
That's my impression, anyway. A more difficult work of art to create, one could hardly imagine. What about your father then? Did your aunt impinge her views on your father, do you think? And where did his support for the Mary Neal movement and so on come from? And was it your aunt who influenced him, or did he have these views before they ever met, do you think?
I think he probably was interested in the women's emancipation before he got involved with the folk dance group.
I see, and that probably led him into the folk dancing. Yes. Did they work together, Esther and your father, at all? I mean, she didn't encourage him into.
I don't think so.
Yes, I see. But your father actually was himself what a member of the Men's League, was he?
Was
he really?
Yes.
How did that fit into his personality? I mean, was he a radical about things generally?
No. It was rather surprising because he was Italian, and when you know the Italian family, if you think of an Italian family, they don't allow their women much freedom, do they?
No, absolutely. Well, they do in a sense, because the matriarch is a great figure there, but on the other hand, not younger women.
So
what was your father's name, Zanina?
Girardi.
I don't think I've come across that name. G-H-I-R-A-R-D-I.
Girardi.
Yes, I don't think I've come across. No doubt if I looked in the books and things, I could. But so, Do you think his sort of joining in this movement was in any way related to his being an Italian? I mean, does it fit at all?
Well, he was very arty, you see, and the dancing fitted very well. And he was in musical comedy at one time.
Was he really?
As a very young person. He at Drury Lane. They lived round in the Italian Quarter of Soho, the back of Drury Lane.
Did they really?
Yeah.
That's because you see, I have found that there are a lot of Jews in the women's movement, particularly in the London sort of area of it, and quite a lot of people with foreign connections of one sort or another. It just sort of, I wonder sometimes whether this is one of the ways of getting yourself accepted. In England.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. I don't know whether that at all fits with your father.
No,
I mean, whether
I don't think that would have been a reason.
He wanted
to get
accepted in that way. But anyway, what did he become, your father, then, eventually? I mean, he started off as an actor, then, did he?
Well, he started off in the theatre and stayed more or less in the theatre until the First World War.
Mm.
Then he went into the Flying Corps. After the war, he never went back to the theatre.
Mm. Mm. So he stayed in the RAF, did he, as it became, or did he?
No, he was demobbed at the end in 1919, mm. And for a time he had a metalworking business, which he made these various statues and those candlesticks. And,
lovely, aren't they? But, so his support for the women consisted, what, in going along to meetings and defending them, did it? Or
that was pretty well all, yes.
Yes. It's interesting. Because I haven't actually ever come across someone who was actually, or spoken to somebody who was the daughter or son of somebody who was actually active in the men's part,
oh yes.
And that's very interesting. So your mother also presumably was in favour, was she? I mean,
yes, but in a very quiet way. She would never have got involved in marches or anything like that.
Well, that's of course very common among women. I mean, there's a whole sort of substrate.